Welcome back to Dating Games, the Modern Relationships Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps, and I'm also joined by your other hosts today. Thank you so much for coming back. If you caught our pilot episode with Maisie Adam on Friday, we are obviously recording this, like much of the content you'll hear, before the show even launches. So hopefully the response has been good. But yeah, thank you for being here for the second episode. So today I'm joined by fellow co-host of my other show, Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. She is also a coach with a background in psychology. I asked her what else she would like to say when I introduce her. And there was a lot of umming and ahhing and like...
Well, no business.
Well, Bobs, I just love people. You know, that's what... I care about people and relationships. And that's why I wanted to do this show. So yeah, I'm an all-round person. So yeah, lover of people... Experienced podcaster who's now getting another show under her belt. Please welcome Danielle Hogan.
Hello. So excited.
Did you like that impression of you?
I did, yeah, because I just didn't want, I was like, bro, I don't want anything to do with business. Forget that now. I'm not working. This isn't my business week. This is our dating game show, which we love, and that's just so fun and fascinates me. So, yeah, so thank you. It was a great intro. And also, I can imagine Maisie's episode was brilliant because... When was the last time anyone's had a conversation without saying, in these COVID times? You know what I mean? Like everything we do and talk about is, you know, at the moment, in the current climate.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've even, on the other show, been trying to think of other ways of phrasing it.
Yeah.
Because what's the one I keep using? During this time. Yeah, I'm so fucking sick of saying during this time. Obviously, it has come up a lot in the interviews I've recorded already, but... You know, I think a lot of dating is nice and universal in another way. You know, we're all trying to connect, we're all trying to be nice, and we don't always know what that means when it comes to dating apps. Mm. And, you know, I've been coming across this week a lot of people that are pro-ghosting and making some compelling arguments I'd never thought of before.
Oh.
Well, just this kind of idea that actually... In some ways, maybe ghosting is appropriate. You've popped up, particularly with dating apps, you've popped up into somebody's life.
Yeah.
And you're realistically a stranger. And then it comes to a point where you fade away again. Some people think that's more appropriate than giving a like definitive reason of, oh, I'm not going to see you again because of this. Particularly if like you've not met them yet.
Yeah.
Or you've maybe only met them once and it was a brief drink. Then maybe it feels disproportionate to be like, so I'm not going to see you again because actually this reason and this reason. Or we're incompatible or you don't want kids. Like, you know, you can't say something like that. I'm not going to go on a second date with you because you said you don't want kids. Like, that's way too intense.
Yeah.
We're meant to pretend we're not thinking about that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I was just going to say it and ask you where you would go with it. But I guess I already know.
Well, I don't ghost people, but then
yeah.
I don't necessarily... And now I'm confused. Is that better? Because I'm quite a direct person anyway. So
yeah.
If you don't want to know, then maybe ghosting is better. Or, you know, or maybe you just keep it vague and you don't give a reason. Maybe that's a compromise. You say you're busy. You do one of those fun British lies.
Bollocks. Yeah, I was just about to say that. Like, it's not you. It's just me. It's just not the right time for me at the moment. Like, that's the common one.
You know what? I've had a bit pre-pandemic. I was dating a lot more. And one month in particular where I must have met two or three people that we'd met up. We'd got as far as that. And then one of the reasons why things hadn't gone further was that they weren't looking for a relationship at the moment. They were like, oh, I'm not really looking for anything serious. I'm not looking for a relationship. And I'm like, why are we here?
Well, probably answer that for you, Bobs.
Right, okay, well, maybe I'm too clean-minded.
Oh, come on.
Right, okay, well, moving on. Sort of setting the scene a bit of the contrast of me being single for most of my adult life, you very much not.
I know, it's love it, don't we? I've been in a relationship for, oh my God, 22 years. Can you believe that?
No.
I know.
I refuse. You're too young.
I know. I'm like 25.
Yeah.
I wish. No, but I've been in this relationship for so long. I think it's only been the last, I don't know, 8 years, maybe since we've had kids, I guess, that we actually feel like we're in this normal relationship. We've always lived in different cities. We've always kind of done different things. So he's been like my guy. But we haven't been, you know, we met and then 18 months later we've moved in together and we've set up a home and everything we do is together and we're friends with couples and we go out with couples and we go out and then we have children. It's just not been that. But I always feel like I have to give that as a caveat when I tell people I've been in a relationship for 20 years. But we're not just a traditional relationship, you know. It's a funny thing, but I question that, you know, why I feel like that. And that's because I stereotype.
What does that say about your stereotypes?
Absolutely.
You're like, but we're a cool couple. Yeah. Like, we have fun.
I know.
We still love each other.
Well, yeah, it does.
I still call him hot, even though maybe I'm too old for that now.
Yeah. Even though we've got a crochet blanket that our friend's mum knitted for us and even put an Aston Villa, which I can't, well, it's cute. He's an Aston Villa fan. She put it's a square of patchwork on this gorgeous, gigantic, colourful crochet blanket, right? It's really cool. And she said, I've even done him a quilt, a square. I mean, he's an avid Villa fan, but we don't, like, represent claret and blue in the house. Of claret and blue, it's only a tiny square. She's like, I thought Anthony'd like it. And I think he did appreciate it. But anyway,
I've just got this vision of him like this because he's a big guy.
Yeah.
He's a big, tough looking man in a crochet quilt. But it's cool because it's branded.
It's
got his team on.
But it's like this really cool blanket that we've got. And, you know, winter's setting in. But it's funny because only last night me and my girlfriends were laughing. And actually my friend's mum had made one for a couple of our friends. She's just cool like that. Bless her. And we were like, my one friend was like, I'm just wrapped here. I'm on a video call with a work colleague in the crochet. And I'm like, yeah, so am I. But you're single and I'm sitting here with my guy next to me with a huge crochet blanket on. And this ain't like pre-sex work. Like, this ain't work, you know, rocking. We've already been together for 20 years and now I've got you and him, us two together, sat watching a movie wrapped in a crochet blanket. It's not sexy. Anyway, there's a time and a place. But going back to your, Anthony and I met when I'd not long moved to Birmingham and I was like 18 and I knew of him. I knew of his reputation and I fancied him.
Right, you're going to have to explain, knew of his reputation.
I mean, he's a bit of a dude, a bit of a street guy.
Right.
And when I was 18, that was quite a cool vibe. Do I have to go into any more detail?
No. Well, I think we're going to uncover the underground networks of girls talking about which men are cool.
Well, yeah. But then that's the cool thing. That's
who's going to get him?
Yeah. I just like that. I just heard a lot about him. People used to talk quite highly of him as a person, but also kind of his whole vibe and whatever. And so I fancied this guy that I knew. He had this, like, name. And then I kept seeing this other guy around for like 18 months, like in like clubs and bars or on the street, like even at a bus stop. And he used to like chat me up and then we wouldn't see each other for like 6 months. I mean, bearing in mind then, there was none of this Instagram business and like following someone, like we were just like, I think he even had a pager. Now that's going back. And then I used to be like, oh yeah, he's nice, like, you know, quite fancy him, but he just seems really like, he was quite a gentleman, because he is quite a gentleman, to be fair, this guy. When I was 18, I think I didn't want a gentleman. I think I wanted, like, edgy. You know what I mean? I fancied the edgy guy who
I just described it by the pager thing. I thought it'd be
Did
such
you
a grown-up.
Do you know what a pager is?
Yes.
Do you?
I thought that'll be a grown-up the day I get a pager.
Did you?
Well, and also I think I associated it with, like, work as well. You know, like my parents, particularly my dad, had one constantly on
his
him.
Belt.
Yeah, it was sort of like a status symbol for me.
Yeah, the pager, and I'd go to a phone box and page him. Oh, shit.
Anyway, so you'd heard his reputation.
Yeah.
You thought, I want me one of those.
I thought, I'll get me one of those. This is sexy to me. And bearing in mind, I've never met this guy. I mean, even that. Never met you, but your name is
right, but that still goes
on.
But I think it's just... what a sentence. I'm giving you a point. But it still goes on, right? We just have Instagram now. Like, there's people that, you know, really attracted to, like, models that live in other countries or, like, people that are going to blow up someone's business here. But a friend of mine who I'll keep anonymous really fancies this girl that he found on Instagram and she happens to also live in the Manchester area. Follows loads of people because they're hot. And then when he saw this one was hot and in Manchester.
Mm.
And so then he's trying to ask me about, like, oh, so how do I make a move on this? And I'm like, I don't know what the rules are here. I've never slid into anyone's DMs. Like, I don't know. You know, I put a lot of work into not being creepy to women. I really try to not be one of those guys. And so I have no advice in this area.
Aww.
But yeah, anyway, but they did get chatting. and at some point they might be going on a date, and so it's all quite sweet. It's kind of newfangled, but then there was a time when it was very weird or seen as very strange and desperate if you were on dating apps, and now it's the norm, particularly for young people. So I kind of wonder, maybe that's the way it's going. And actually, maybe there's something to be said for it, because they already know they fancy the sight of each other, so that's one step.
Yeah.
You know, and then if they meet up and they already know they like chatting a little bit, and then they get to meet up, so maybe there's less risk of wasting your time going on a date.
Maybe, but there's also a load of bollocks that about what people put out on social media that's not even true, and you make judgments, don't you? But anyway, that will save that social media dating conversation for now. We'll park it.
Yeah, sorry. You'd heard about Anthony's reputation. That's what we're up to.
Yeah, but I'd met this guy also over about a year and a half. And he was a gentleman, he's really nice. And like, my friend lost his pager number because I asked her to hold it, had a dress on. I always never forget that. She probably remember it when she listens to this. She'll be like, oh my God, I can't really believe you remember that. And I kept losing his number and we kept missing each other. But what I loved that he was so cool about, he never like chased me down. And that was really cool as well.
Wait, so when you lost his number, what, you just had it written down?
Yeah, he wrote his pager number down and I said to my friend, will she hold it?
Ah.
We're in a club. And then she lost
it.
Oh dear. Yeah, and this is about the third sighting of this guy, so I was pissed
off.
Were
you there on the floor hunting for
it? No, the next morning. I was way too drunk for that, probably. But, you know, I was like, oh God, I'm never going to actually connect with this guy. We just keep missing each other. When I did see him, I remember the first time I met him, and it was in a public place where he started to talk to me, and he could tell I was a bit embarrassed, and he was like, don't worry, I'll see you again. And I was like, oh my God, like, guys never do that. They're always like, no, so what's your number?
That's quite a hot thing to say, actually.
So hot, Bob.
There's a confidence in that line.
Such a confidence in that line. And I thought, oh, and he got in his car and drove off. And I was like, oh my gosh, oh my God, oh my God. Never saw him again for another 6 months. And then one day I'm outside another club. I mean, I spent my life when I was 18, 19, probably till about 35, going out. But anyway, I was outside this other club and it wasn't a club. It was like, do you know what a blues is? I reckon you probably know what blues is, Bob. Mm. So I was outside this house party, basically, in a city area, 2 o'clock in the morning. And I was in a car with my friend and her guy and his mate, like the four of us. But me and the guy, there was no connection. They'd come and picked us up after a club and said, oh, do you want to swing by a party? So we're like outside this party on the road.
Miss house parties.
I know. I mean, when are they ever going to come back with COVID? You know, clubs and bars are one thing. Or maybe they're happening now. We need to get on the underground scene, Bob, because house parties are going on. We're just not getting invited.
We're not going to endorse that publicly.
No, we're not.
But no, it is something. I'm like, what does that say about me that I miss waking up in a house of strangers and not knowing whose leg is draped across me? Something I should have grown up from.
Yeah. Oh, God, I love it. So, and he came over to the car. The guy that has been chatting me up for ages came over to the car. The guy in the front seat said to his friend, oh, there's such and such, the name of this mysterious guy that I'd fancied, his reputation. Oh, there's such and such. And I said to this guy, oh, who's he? I've heard of this guy for like a year. I really want to know who he is. And then he walks over the road and it's him.
Wow.
I never told you that story. I don't think I have.
No.
Couldn't believe it.
I mean, well, you know what our mate Marcus would say? He'd say, you've manifested it.
You've manifested it.
You held it in your mind. You found a way to make it happen.
Yeah, I think it's because all my friends kind of know that story. I feel like, why wouldn't you? But it was him. He came walking over the road. And it's this guy that I've seen as this gentleman that's been really kind of cool, like sexy, not pushed me. And then this guy in my head that I've thought this real kind of street boy, edgy, bit naughty. And it's the same fucking guy.
Was there any part of you that was disappointed that he wasn't what you thought of the name?
I wasn't disappointed. I was, I think, in a moment of shock, but I was then really intrigued. So I was thinking, oh my God, who are you? Like, is that you? But that's not who I thought you were. Maybe that's where my love of breaking down stereotypes and perceptions and what people are and who they represent in society maybe came from, because that was probably one of the biggest shocks that I'd carried around. And then it's this dude who didn't dress in the way that I thought he would, who just didn't represent that kind of guy that I thought I was thinking of, you know what I mean? And then he saw me as well and he was like...
But that happens all the time. Like, even, you know, I get it a lot because one of my jobs is modelling. And people have all kinds of assumptions about that. Mm-hmm. So I have been told on dates, you're nicer than I thought you'd be.
Right.
And like, what does that mean? Yeah. Also, what is the response to that? I do not know.
I
like,
know.
Just like,
oh, thanks.
Thank you.
I know.
Thanks that I'm not a dickhead. Like, and so did things take off with you guys from there?
Yeah, that's been it then ever since.
Oh,
I know.
That's cute. So you did catch him.
I caught the guy. He looked at me and he's like, "It's you." And I was like, "Oh my god, it's you." And then the joke of the end of the story is, he went, "Do you want to come inside for a drink?" Go into a drink to this, I mean, hardcore blues, like deep bass coming out of this big speaker, a little hole in the wall serving little Backstreet brandy and whatever. And he's like, "Do you want a drink?" And I said, "It's so embarrassing." I said something like that you'd order in a bar. 18, so I'm not as experienced as I think, but I'm sure I asked for something like a Smirnoff Ice or like Bacardi Breezer or whatever kind of bullshit alcopop drink I was drinking. He was like, "Nah, babe, none of that."
He passed you some hooch, yeah. Like a real woman.
He was like, "No, none of that, Randy. It's like a brandy and coke or like a Guinness punch or whatever." And I was like, "Okay, I'll have a brandy and coke." Shit. So that was embarrassing. He laughed. He said, he thought to himself then, this girl ain't from these parts. But the joke was, I'm in the car and where I lived, where the guys picked me up from, he didn't really know much about me. And I was living in an area, I guess, wasn't where I'm from or anything like that. But I was just living with a mate in a house in a certain area. So this guy had said to him, "Oh, there's a girl in the car from who wants to talk to you." And he says, even to this day, "I wouldn't normally go up to cars if someone said there's a girl that wants to talk to me." But I thought, you know what? Let me just go over and see. I'm like, shut up. Like, you came straight over. So then when he saw me, he was thinking, "You're not from there. That's not you." Same thing the other way around, I guess. Because he was like, he had an image of girls from that area alike. Then I turn up, who he's met over the years.
But I kind of feel like that's universal, right? We fill in the gaps when it comes to dating. We just assume things and we build up this picture. And I catch myself doing it where I describe someone I'm interested in and I just like start describing things that I've decided they're like.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I'm really trying to, because I don't even think we realise that we're doing it. They're like really friendly, they're really popular. And I'm like, where am I getting this from? I've not surveyed them on how many friends they have or are they nice to their parents. I don't know.
We make up stories.
But oftentimes you're describing what you want and you're hoping the person lives up to it. And then that's the whole challenge of, I need to get to know this person and I need to let go of my misconceptions. Find out who they really are. And luckily, you're pretty cool. Behind your reputation, so is Anthony.
Oh, well, it's then like you get the opportunity when you are single to be whoever you want to be in any moment and date accordingly, or have 3 years later, you kind of change and your vibe's different and you're looking for someone. You know, like it's...
That is true.
It's a really nice, fresh way to be able to live with that freedom. And as much as Anthony and I kind of try and maintain that, especially because I'm the work that I do and the stuff that I'm into is all about that freedom and no expectation, we try and instill that. But when you've been with someone for all these years, you do have that... Well, you're like that, or he wouldn't like that because he's not like that. This predetermined expectation when you're single and you're dating feels so exciting to a non-dater like me. All my friends are like, "The grass ain't greener, honey."
Mm.
The grass ain't not greener.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. But it's funny, actually, that you say that, because when I was younger, like particularly like coming up to the end of secondary school, I really loved the idea of settling down with someone young. I don't know where I got it from. I'm not even sure, was that pre a big fat gypsy wedding and seeing them get all married off at 16, which I'm not saying that's aspirational necessarily, but I think somewhere in my head, I love the idea of getting in with somebody now and then sort of growing through the like turbulence of your like early adulthood with somebody and finding jobs together and finding a place together and all that kind of stuff. And yet, now that I think about it looking back, I'm like, Jesus, that would have been awful. I don't think they would have necessarily stuck by me because of how much my life has changed, how much I've changed. Because I find that even with friends I've known for a long time.
That's it.
That I find myself having to explain the person I am now because I have to sort of like catch them up. And yet when you go out on a date and it's a new person, it's a blank slate. And so for me, as a very extroverted person, that's so exciting to go meet someone and be like, I can be exactly who I am today And they may have their expectations, but that's to do with them. But they don't have necessarily an expectation of, I'm going to be like I used to.
Yeah. And I think that's important from us, even personally, the way we think about ourselves, like freeing us from, even if we're acting maybe differently or in a different phase of our lives, there's still some element of us that we kind of think, I know what I'm like. We often all say that phrase. How often do we say that?
Well, I'll be vulnerable and tell you one that I'm funny about, which you probably already know. A lot of people describe me as sweet, even so much as cute. And it's sort of jarring because I got through a lot of, and, you know, people can hear about it on the mental health podcast by all means, but I got through a lot of turbulence in my childhood, a lot of mental health problems, you know, personal instability through being really tough. And so I came to really strongly identify with that. Mm-hmm. And then when people meet me and they're like, oh, you're really sweet, you're really cute, I'm like, no, you don't, you've got confused. Because it's not really how I see myself. And I think there's a middle ground because, yes, I can be those things, but I'm those things because I'm interested in you and I'm giving you the time of day. That doesn't mean I suffer fools gladly. Like, the toughness is still there. I've just softened, whereas when I was younger, particularly in certain areas of mental health issues, I was very on the defensive.
Right.
And I was quite aggressive with it.
Right.
And, you know, pushing people away a lot. And now I've sort of learned to soften it for the right people.
For the right people, of course, like me.
Yeah, but also I guess that's part of it why I don't like, particularly when I'm just meeting somebody, just getting to know somebody, them to, like, give me too many compliments like that and be like, oh, you're so sweet, you're such a gentleman, like, you really look after me. Because I'm like, I feel like you're setting up an expectation that I can't meet.
You're going to fail. This isn't the real me. No, but what it is, I think, is you do sweet things more than you are sweet. You are strong, you are direct, you know what you're about, you love learning and taking things in. You are opinionated. And so there's so much strength that is around you, but you do little things that are sweet. Like, you give little presents or you'll do something that's really thoughtful. And that's why I think people at times, oh, you're so sweet. Like, it's a surprise. It's not a surprise. You don't come across sweet or vulnerable at all, but you do cute things for people.
Good. No vulnerability.
No, I know. But so what? Like, be vulnerable.
But then, you know, it's like anyone, right? We're trying not to get hurt.
I know.
And that's, like, that's again a specific dating thing that I try and not do. And podcasting does not help. Interviewing people as a big part of my work makes it even easier for me to slip into just interviewing someone on a date. As if I'm not already a big personality as is, and then I have 100 questions for you. Like, you know.
Shit!
Yeah, that can be a lot. So I really try and tone it down because it's actually way too easy for me. Not with everyone, but with a lot of people, it's far too easy for me to actually self-disclose nothing or very little. Or I can, like, seem vulnerable. Obviously, mental health I talk about a lot. Mm-hmm. And to a lot of people, that comes across very vulnerable, but I'm very used to talking about it.
Mm.
You know, if I talk to you about the stuff I'm still trying to figure out, that's a real vulnerability.
Yeah.
Telling you some of the things I've been through, that's already out there on the internet. I'm sort of distanced from that emotionally.
Yeah. Maybe there's a bit of an uncertainty about how this is going, what are they thinking about me? And also, when you choose to be vulnerable, when you let a little bit of a guard down, like, I guess, again, there's levels, like we were talking earlier. Some people, within 10 minutes, they might let a bit down. If some people, it might be 10 days. Like, when do you start feeling that you can be? And maybe that's when the true connection comes in, because I think when people, even if it's subconsciously, when people are slightly more vulnerable in a moment, I think on reflection, that's when they see that sense of kind of connection, and actually it felt quite good because I was vulnerable. I kind of showed something in myself and it worked out.
So I do try and do that. But then I think I've got the other side of it, which is, like, a lot of the things that are vulnerable for me are also quite intense. Like, sometimes I'll describe stuff to do with maybe my family or maybe, like, a friend I'm having drama with or a particular ex. And because it's so in-depth and analytical, it's a lot. It can be a lot for people to take in. And so I've had it before where people are like, oh, you really hated that ex. And I'm like, no, I can just describe why the relationship was so bad. I don't hate them, you know, so it's maybe a level of analysis as well.
Yeah. Is it conscious when you go on dates of what to be like?
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I try and make sure to talk about me as well and not just, you know, only
asking them questions.
And I don't think I can be entirely blamed as an individual. Like, we are going on dates to get to know the other person.
Yeah.
Like, so of course I want to ask about them, but, you know, they also
they should
know
ask
about
you.
Me.
But they should ask you too.
But I have, here's a funny story though. I did go on a date with this girl once, in fact, twice. And we really got on. Didn't ask me a single question about myself. Like, even, you know, even the obvious stuff, like, oh, how was your day? And then she'd go on a monologue about her day and then start telling me about something else. You know, all the obvious, like, how was your day? None of that. And then I went on another date and, like, I genuinely enjoyed her company. I wasn't sure if it was going to go anywhere. Part of me was kind of fascinated to see, will the second date be the same? You know, were you, you know, was it like you'd had a hectic day and you were just kind of word vomiting, like, what was it? Had nobody listened to you that week? Uh-huh. And I was really listening, and so it all came out. And then the second date was exactly the same.
Was it?
And we got to, like, near the end, we had a meal. We went to an Italian restaurant, and she's Italian, so she was like, you're taking a risk. I was like, oh dear.
Oh.
But she liked the food, luckily, and it was good, actually, because she got to tell me about, like, oh, you know, traditionally this would be made slightly more this way, and so it was good conversation as well. Getting near the end of the date then, finishing up our food, and she turns to me, like, in all seriousness, right, so why are you single? Imagine that being the first question that you've been
Bloody
asked.
Hell.
It was sort of this thing where she'd clearly got so comfortable with me, but it was that jarring thing of, I've really not talked about anything. Because this is the kind of thing that would come up in a dialogue. Happen to mention an ex, even if it was accidental, or you'd mention, like, oh yeah, I've not been on a date in a little while. Like, things would kind of come up for context, and to realise she had none of that context because it was such a one-way dialogue.
I think she was nervous. She must have been.
Wow.
What a funny question to come out with at the end of just chatting a load about yourself.
Yeah. I mean, a good selling point on me. I was obviously succeeding at being a supportive listener. She was obviously considering locking this down. But yeah, we actually bumped into each other a little while later. Spontaneously went for a drink. Like, I had my headphones on. I was striding, as you know, I stride.
Yeah.
And she sort of just appeared in my eye line because she tried to, like, shout me and I didn't hear her. So she just, like, popped out in front of me. And so we went for a drink because we both happened to, like, have a minute. And it was a lot more relaxed and it was a lot more back and forth. So I think you're exactly right.
Yeah. She was nervous. She was like, I want this guy, but I don't know how to just be relaxed and just talk to him.
And I think she was performing.
Yeah.
I'll get all my interesting stories out now. And he keeps asking me questions, so he's obviously interested. I've got to keep up the chat.
It's crazy because I think I'd be... Imagine the first time you say to your boyfriend, like, 10 years ago, I'd love to go on a date with someone. He's like... And I didn't think it was a funny thing to say until I told my friend, and she was like, you told your boyfriend of, like, 12 years that you want to go on a date with somebody else. I was like, no, but you're missing the point. It's not because I want to meet anybody else because I don't want you, but the whole dating experience, this dating world that's come about.
So you wanted
us.
The newness. So you didn't mean, like, he hasn't taken you on a date in ages.
Oh,
you
yeah, we go on dates. Yeah. Well, yeah, because I want to know what I'm like from somebody else. Like, that was my thinking. Like, I think in, like, other countries, especially the States, like, people talk so openly about dating from the age of, like, 13, 14, everybody, like, are you going on a date? It's like that in our country, especially when I was growing up, in the 90s, really, you'd kind of go out or have a drink with someone, or not even have a drink. We didn't have, like, coffee shops, really. You'd be on the park or whatever. Like, now I think dating's so much more open. You can talk about dating or go and have a coffee or have a drink. It just wasn't like that years. We didn't, maybe it's just my world and my culture, but we weren't really going on dates. So since this whole boom of dating and dating apps and people being quite open about dating and what is dating and social media and stuff, I've been really intrigued. Like, all my friends are kind of single and I just want to see what I'm like. And then I think, would I just go there and just, because I think, you know, I'm interested in people and I love people, I'd just be chatting away. But actually, is there a bit of an art to it? Would I need to, like, back down a little bit and just calm and be like, oh, hi, and then play this whole game of dating?
I mean, yeah, as much as I'm, like, sharing all my complicated thoughts about it, I come across well on a date. I know how to be confident and...
Do you?
Yeah, and bring up conversations and keep the conversation flowing and that kind of stuff. So I think that really helps.
Have you had good feedback?
Yeah.
It's just a shame you didn't like them as much.
But no, well, some of them I did, but it's, you know, it's complicated. There's no easy answer. Just because I can go to a date and generally not be nervous and come across really confident can maybe make somebody else nervous.
Mm.
You know, if they're not feeling that way.
Yeah.
So I don't think there is any answer. You know, it's all human connection and doing our best, and very much feel like I'm still on that journey. But I think you've raised an important thing, though, because you don't end that when you get into a relationship. Like, you still have to work on relationships too. Mm-hmm. You've just settled into one.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of it's universal.
Yeah. We're still working all the time to make sure. And you still have, like, that buzz if we're going out together, like, to get dressed up and I want to put something on and I don't want him to come upstairs while I'm half ready. Like, I kind of want to be like...
Yeah. Ta-da! I don't know how I got onto this in my research, but I was reading like tips for married couples on like keeping things fresh, and that was one of the things. Get ready for your date separately.
Yeah, it's so important. You know, and I don't want to know what he's putting on.
Yeah, come down the stairs, or, you know, come from work.
Yeah.
They even said, like, bring a change of clothes, come from work, and then you'll get the surprise of seeing each other and what you're wearing.
Yeah, and you kind of know you've both made an effort, and you both, you know, and generally you know that, oh, I washed that last week, you know, there's all the differences. I can remember when we bought that or when we did that. I've seen that before. You couldn't have wore that. I love him in a denim shirt, and he doesn't wear denim shirts very often. I love denim. I love him in a denim shirt. And so little things, like if he puts a denim shirt on for a date, he knows I love that, and that'll make me smile a bit. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
That's cool. That's quite cute. And those are the things, I guess, when you're in a relationship and you're dating within your relationship together, that are the nice things that you'll do that the other person recognises that you've done for them a bit. So that's quite cool. But yeah, it's still planned. That's the difference, isn't it? It's still planned. The whole thing's planned. Sex can even become a bit planned, you know, because you're in this relationship, you've got these kids. Like, if you have a night off together, it's quite a big night. You know what I mean?
But also there's that thing of like, oh, we've got to make the most of it. That's not necessarily a sexy pressure.
It's not a sexy pressure at all, because desire and love are completely different. They go hand to hand. They should do. But they are two different things. You can love without desire, and you can desire without love. And desire is the most important thing when you're in a long-term relationship like mine.
And I've just realised I left the window open, so hopefully we can hear that.
Yeah.
The other thing you mentioned was culture. And I feel like we need to get into this, because I think this quite heavily informs our dating.
Yeah.
And actually, I think if you listen closely, hear me realise this even more in the episode that's coming out next Friday with Eilish O'Carroll from Mrs. Brown's Boys, who's from Dublin, like my mum and much of my family. And so being Irish, I think there's so much that I maybe take for granted of cultural differences. And I'm still on the journey of like figuring out, oh, you know, some of these things that I come across that I feel the need to like tone down, or that I'm aware that I come across a bit different with, is partly to do with cultural background.
Yeah, like what?
Well, we talk about it in the episode, I think, but things like being just really curious about people. You know, I get labelled being nosy a lot, but it's that trying to figure people out. Yeah. And, you know, I get it. It's not just me, it's my family. Like, I won't tell my parents if I've met an Irish person, but I didn't ask them where they're from, because that will frustrate them. If I'm like, oh, yeah, I met such and such, they're from Ireland, and they'll be like, where? And I'll be like, oh, I don't know, maybe this area. No, where are they from? I'm like, I don't know. And it will frustrate them because they want to try and, like, figure people out.
Do we do that? I think we do that with minority groups in this country.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not just an Irish thing. It's figuring people out.
We all do it, don't we? Yeah.
And, like, I do it. I think I do it to other minority groups. I can generally have a fairly good guess on whether someone's from a Caribbean versus an African background.
Yeah. I guess it's difficult when for anybody visually to be completely decisive, and even if people have got British accents, but yeah, it's
or that mixed race between both.
But yeah, there you go, yeah. But definitely, even for us, yeah, I'm half Caribbean, half maybe quarter Irish, and I say maybe because I don't know whether how much we quantify what part of what, and you know, the whole fraction and equation. But on my white British side, my granddad's dad was Irish, so but. We are, from a Caribbean point of view, like, we would definitely know generally if somebody's, or ask, or if you're on a date, you kind of know, and that kind of means something. If you don't know their surname, it's like, what does it mean as well?
Definitely, you have that between, like, which island are they from?
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's these stereotypes.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like I know some of the stereotypes. I think, you know, maybe Jamaicans are seen as, like, more confident and having a sort of more like a big island mentality. I've heard people talk about.
God, I'm laughing because me and Anthony had this massive, I'll call it debate for the sake of the podcast.
Am I gonna get you in trouble?
Yeah, I'll call it debate after we came out home from having a few gorgeous rum cocktails of the week, and we would started to talk about it and it just didn't go well, which I think it was just because we'd had a drink. It was weird. But Anthony's background's Jamaican and mine's Dominican. He had this thing that sometimes I can be a little bit harsh when it comes to talking about Jamaicans. And it's funny because it's almost like one Jamaican guy can handle it and they do it for themselves. Jamaicans are amazing. Like, I brought up with Jamaicans. There's so much more of them here than any other people from other islands. But yeah, because Jamaicans, they are the big, they are a huge island in the Caribbean. And there's so much that I think coming, you know, over the last 30, 40 years, or even from migration, when the Caribbeans came over to this country, the population of Jamaicans was so much that their culture led the culture of what people see as being black in Britain 50 years ago. Most black people here were Jamaican, you know what I mean? And music and language and food came from that. You know, I've been to Jamaica. I haven't been to Dominica. Do you know what I mean?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And
so they're beating you on the tourism, obviously.
But they are, and they are for the whole of the Caribbean. Of course I want to go. Like, that's my people. Like, I'd feel like I'd get there and be like, oh my God, they all look like me. This is where I belong. And my family are, I've got a huge family, Dominican family. So we cook, and there's lots of different, slight differences, Bob, you know, between Dominican food and Jamaican food. Like, there's differences. I feel so much more, I don't know, confident maybe even cooking Jamaican food, because I wasn't brought up with my dad in terms of living with him. My mum and dad had never been together. They met when they were 17. And although my dad and my mama and all my aunties and uncles on my Dominican side have always been in my life, but growing up as a kid, I was the only grandchild. My dad was so young. I got fed. I wasn't cooking. I wasn't learning those kind of things. And then my mum met a British guy's Jamaican heritage when I was like 6. And had my sister, and I grew up with him and his family, who are all Jamaican. Then I met Anthony when I was 18. So the Jamaican culture, I reckon, is much more.
So even it being quite dominant in this country came through in your life as well.
Dominant in my life as well. It's just something that over the last few years,
And it's something I think you have to think about,
yeah.
Because we talk about that a bit generally about politics and how so much of that can be inherited. But it's the same when it pertains to ethnicity, that there's a lot of things that I hear, like, older relatives say about different parts of Ireland and what they're like and what the people are like. And, you know, you never really know how true that is.
Well, no, you're making a judgment if you go with it, aren't you? Which none of us should be doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's their perception as that generation.
And figure out, okay, what's different areas really like.
But what triggered it with us is we're walking down the road with the kids in lockdown, and there's some food cooking from this family's house, and the windows were open. It smelled like curry. And one of my children said, oh, smell that food. It smells like Jamaican food. And I said, why not be Jamaican? Just Caribbean, could be Caribbean food, it could whatever. And that he just, when we got home, he was really pissed off about that, because he was just like, why do you always take it away from that it's Jamaican? Like, what's wrong? What if it's Jamaican food? And I'm like, well, I mean, maybe this is just a silly thing between us, but I was a bit like, well, I'm not. And he's like, you do it all the time. If they say something's Jamaican, I'm like, but I'd do it if they said, you know, heels are only for girls. I'd say, well, no, boys can wear heels as well if they want. Does that make sense?
Yeah, trying to just have less assumptions.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, a way to kind of have a more inquiring mind. You know, that's what you're like. You love to ask questions.
Yeah.
And not assume.
I think he just got a bit offended. He's like, all right.
I can see it. I know what he means.
Do you?
Yeah, because I sometimes get that with, I'm quite into my politics. And sometimes when I'm criticising the government, people take that because of my background to be that I'm criticising the British.
Yeah.
And that's not the same thing. Like, I think, and this is an important point, irrespective of whether or not you are British, if you're living here, I think everyone's entitled to an opinion on politics. We're all living under the same government.
Mm-hmm.
Some people wouldn't see me as being entitled to a perspective on that.
Wow.
And
you know, that ain't going to go down well with you, is it, Bob? And is that something in dating, though? Is that, is politics a thing in dating?
Oh, it is now.
Yeah, I'd
be interested, actually, listeners, let us know. Write a 5-star review, but put in the comment what you think about this.
Yeah,
I think it is. I think particularly with how divisive politics is now, so certain apps like Hinge, you can list on there. I can't remember how they describe it, but you can list your kind of political leaning.
Do you like that?
I think that kind of stuff can serve to divide us further. I don't believe that I have to have somebody of my political persuasion in order to date them. Because if nothing else, it's not fixed enough. Do you know what I mean? I have different opinions on different policies. Like, it's not,
right. You
know, and I have, you know, who I'd vote for in Ireland and who I'd vote for in this country. And I know which side I'd be on with Trump versus Biden. I know where I am, but it's open to change and I'm open to new ideas and different perspectives.
Yeah, you've always said that to me, like, just because I've got a certain view, somebody else had a different view, it wouldn't necessarily put me off dating them.
Also, I kind of have to, like, I think even sometimes for myself, keep it in context. Like, I don't even have a preference for the gender of the person I'm in a relationship with. I have no business being like, no, they have to be this specific politics.
No, that's a good point.
That seems like the wrong way around.
Yeah. Who are you as opposed to what you do or what you stand for on this? When, it, like you said, I think the fluidity is
But it is a big deal. Yeah. And there are certain things that I'm sure we can all think of that would be a hard stop for you. You know, like, I think I need to be dating somebody that's also a feminist. But if we can't agree with gender equality, like, if that can't be the starting point of your opinion... I'm going to struggle with that.
Yeah, and I think a lot of issues, social issues, you know, then do come down to... You tend to then fall for people that may have your type of political... In general, have your political, maybe, view. But
it's complicated.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean that you couldn't be with somebody that did have a different view. That's probably the, you know what I mean, the way to say it. You're generally going to find yourself around people that kind of see things in the way that you do, but it doesn't mean that... If they didn't, there couldn't be a relationship there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Oh, it all got quite serious. So the last thing we need to do is look at the rules of the game. So we've got to choose a rule of dating each. And this is new for this episode. We won't have had it in the pilot, but for each episode, we'll be choosing a rule of the game, both me and the guest. Already, I'm finding that often mine and me, like, nicking something off the guest. so into the conversation, I forget about this. But so one of the rules of the game for me is, I think, a bigger thing than politics and a lot of other factors is this person growing?
Preach.
Because that's gonna be a jarring thing, because I'm, you know, very into personal growth, obviously known very much for, like, mental health campaigning. I care about self-care, I care about career progression, I go to counselling. So, you know, if someone is very rooted and closed off to new things, that can be a quick way to write yourself off with me.
I think that's a deal breaker. Yeah, and I know it's a weird analogy, but it happened to me yesterday. And it's about sport. Again, another area where you and I are completely different. But I'm playing that. I'm working with these girls. And, like, I've always said this.
Because you've done sport in your life.
I do still do sport in my life. A lot of it. But I'm playing with these girls. And, like, I would prefer a team of girls who aren't too good, but work to learn and to improve and to try. They are kicking asses off. Than a few girls who are maybe seen to be better, but ponced around like their shit don't stink and that they've not got any growth or any room for learning. And it's the same kind of thing in the relationship. I know what you mean. My rule of the game is to bring your whole self and be in the moment with that person. So really being there and listening and communicating with that person about whatever it is in that moment you guys have got together, without all those distractions that come in or predetermined ideas or stereotypes about that, what that person might be. It sounds like a cliche, but take people for who they are. Take me as I am. I hope that's too much. Me too. Yeah, take somebody for what you see in that moment.
Yeah. No, that's great. And it's very, very much on dating, you know, being present, paying attention. You know, the amount you can learn just by paying close attention. I mean, I'm like that, and it's partly from having dyslexia. I really tune into people's sentence structure and, you know, yeah, the phrases they use. Like, I do it to you sometimes.
All the time.
I'm like, oh, Danielle, you say this a lot and you hate it.
Well, yeah, and even the way that you approach things, you're like my English teacher. And like you say, I've got you, I'm the one, you're the home dyslexic, Dan. And I'm, but can we actually put that in the right place? Can we change that format on that research paper?
To be fair, I can't spell shit. No. I'm like...
But you know how you want things to look and read and sound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Vocally, I have intentions.
I'm like, all right.
But yeah, I think that kind of stuff is interesting, but I love it as well. Like, I love people's accents. I love, like, soaking that up when I'm on a date with somebody. I find it fascinating and attractive because it's part of who they are.
Do you know what will be interesting? People being honest about what puts them off, because it's a bit bad. Some things can be quite bad, you know, quite shallow. I'm not going to go into it. We'll go into it another time. There's things that I would imagine would really piss me off if somebody did, and it'd be a small thing. I don't even want to admit that I'm that person, but I reckon everyone out there can have some things that are a bit turn-offs, even if they're not huge things, Bob, about someone.
Oh, I mean, here's a really petty one. I hate it when somebody slams down a drink on a table. I'm not saying I'm breaking up with anyone over it, but if we're on a first date and there's a lot of glass slamming, it puts me right on edge.
Yeah.
Because if nothing else, the glasses in my home will not survive it. You know, plastic tumbler in a bar, fine, but I don't even think it's something conscious, but it's maybe sort of like, do they seem aggressive? Do they seem gentle? Like, it's, I think we read all sorts into the littlest of things.
I know.
So yeah, on that note.
Yeah, I was going to say, put my phone down. See, now you've got me starting rules of the game. We could talk about those for like, we could have 20 rules each.
No, there's probably enough rules out there, but it's just a way to reflect with the guest and look at something they try and bring. You know, it's a kind of learning point from their approach to dating.
Yeah,
so some of them will be funny, some of them will be silly. Quite a lot of them are pretty serious and insightful. So yeah, we've talked enough. We've reached our time. So thank you so much for joining me. And you'll be able to hear us paired up again every month on the first Monday of the month, where we'll delve into some of the themes that have come up in the regular weekly episodes on Fridays. This is not the end of Danielle.
Yay! Excited, so excited for dating games.
Thanks for listening. For bonus content, extended ad-free episodes, and other perks, you can join our Patreon, linked in the episode description. Our show is edited and produced by Pete Mata, with music by the brilliant Tessa Violet. Speak to you next Friday. Until then, game well.